Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my usual cohorts in crime here with me today. First up, he writes shaman columns, but he also knows a heck of a lot about lore. It would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Well, hi there, everybody.
How's it going?
It is very warm. Otherwise, okay.
Have you gotten a chance to play through Chromie yet?
Yes, and I made a tweet earlier about it because I have many things at some point to say about that because I think we might have been right about a couple things.
Okay, well, we're going to have to talk about that on another,
show.
Yes. Because I haven't quite beaten it yet. I was gone for a week, so.
Well, it's not meant to be beaten in one thing. That's the interesting thing about it, and I love that idea. It's essentially World of Warcraft Groundhog's Day.
Right, and I am having a lot of fun with that, and I am at the point where it's like I've gotten the dragon shrines down, and now I'm working on the little portal things. And there's just all kinds of chaos going on, and I'm very happy with it. So I was just wondering if you had beaten it or not. I haven't beaten it yet. I will. Hopefully before we record the next show, I will have it beat. And maybe we can chat about our little bronze friend and timelines, because that's always fun. Anyway, speaking of fun, we've also got our other co-host, our other lore-focused writer over on Blizzard Watch with us today, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi, how's it going?
I'm good. I haven't even started it yet because we left town this weekend, and so I've been doing that. So
no Chromie
I'll get back to it. We'll get back to it. When I tried playing Tuesday, it was just not happening. Like the servers were like, no, you don't get to play.
Yeah, I heard Tuesday was a little bit hairy.
Yeah, Tuesday was kind of rough. So then like Wednesday and Thursday, I had, you know, there was stuff that needed to be written. So I was doing that. And I figured, you know, hey, Friday we were out of town. And then Saturday we were out of town. And then today I just got back and it's just been foomf.
Tired.
So I haven't actually gotten a chance to do that yet. I'm looking forward to it. But mostly because they're not opening LFR for a couple of weeks. It doesn't. So I'll have time. Because I'm not going to be doing like normal mode.
Time. You made a funny. No.
Yes. I didn't make a funny. Trust me. Any puns or jokes I make today are completely
accidental. They're purely unintentional. Yeah.
I am basically sitting here going, yes, the world exists. I am very uncomfortably warm. Let's just go. Okay. Good.
Okay, well, since you mentioned it, what we're going to be talking about this week, we're not addressing reader emails this week. We're going to talk about the Tomb of Sargeras, a.k.a. the Temple of Ilune, because that is actually opening, for people who are listening to this via Patreon a week early, it's going to be opening on Tuesday on, I believe it's Normal and Heroic, correct?
Yeah.
And then the week following, when people on the website hear this, it's going to be, you'll hear about it the day before LFR launches. LFR and Mythic will be opening the week following the 20th, so the 27th? Yes, mm-hmm. I can math. Yes. Okay. But since this is actually, it's a pretty important raid. It is not the final raid of the expansion. We thought maybe it was going to be, but it turns out we've got something to contend with on Argus that we don't know about yet. However, the Temple of Alun is a pretty fascinating historical place. The Tomb of Sargeras is a pretty fascinating historical place. It wasn't called the Tomb of Sargeras until Aegwynn showed up and basically buried the avatar of Sargeras there, because that seemed to be a good place to put it, I guess. But a lot of the raid bosses and things like that that we are going to see kind of point to maybe different origins of the Temple of Alun that maybe we haven't considered. I don't know. What I do want to talk about, though, is I kind of want to talk about the history of the Temple of Alun itself before it became the Tomb of Sargeras, and then what happened with Aegwynn when she showed up, that kind of thing. So which one of you wants to tackle the Temple of Alun?
What do you mean by tackle it? I don't want to take the building on. It's huge.
I know, right? it might fall over and crumble on us, and that's a whole mess.
I mean, I can give a broad strokes.
Give us the broad history of this building, because it's obvious when you go to the Broken Shore, this was a night elf building. There's like elves all over it. Even though it's riddled with fel, you could see there's influences there. Obvious influences. So yeah, what's up with that building, Rossi?
Well, for starters, I mean, we don't really know the exact origins. The Temple of Alun is in Suramar. Suramar is one of, for lack of a better word, I want to call them twin cities. There was Suramar, and then basically on the other side, there was Zinashari. They were on opposing sides of the Well of Eternity. And essentially, Zinashari was originally called Alunara. And it was like the Eye of Alun was the name in Elven. And Suramar was kind of it's sort of the mirror of it, sort of its reflection. And that
kind of had sister cities.
Yeah. But their religion of the Night Elves basically told them that Alun descended into the Well of Eternity every day, and he came up again at night. So the reflection of the city of Alun had a kind of symbolic weight, because you would see the reflection of Alun in the well. Like, that's part of how their religion developed. So the temple was originally built there. I don't actually know how long ago it was built. That's one of those things that they've never really been that specific on. But we know, like, it was a very important cult center, even going back to before the Well of Eternity blew up, before the War of the Ancients. If you read the War of the Ancients books, Taranda comes to the Temple of Alun as a young woman, and it's already been there for like thousands of years. There, it's very strong. There's already like a very well developed priesthood there. It's a big deal even back then. And as a result, when the demons were finally pouring out of the well, when they were coming through the portals, the priesthood stood against them. I mean, which is not tremendously surprising. I mean, you don't really want a bunch of demons running loose. The only reason that Ashara did was that she was kind of insane. Although it's debatable whether you can argue that she was insane or it's just that full of herself. But High Priestess Dejana, who was the High Priestess at the time, basically made it, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call it common cause. It might have been an alliance. I don't know how you want to put it. But she basically said, you know, realized that Cortalos Ravencrest was the only one who was really fighting to preserve their people. Like, the Highborn were not doing anything, as far as she could tell. So she and the Temple of Alun essentially allied with the Night Elf, the Kaldari Resistance, and were helping fight the Legion. So as a result, when Ashara basically, I don't want to know if the word's punished. I don't know how you describe it, but she essentially,
I think punishment is accurate.
She basically gave the temple over to the demons, and the demons were using it to try and create a second portal. They were going to make another portal to basically flood the world with demons. They already had the one portal open. They were going to open another one. As a result, Grand Magistrix Elisande, who at the time actually reported straight to Ashara, she was Ashara's chief relic finder. She decided, no, I am done. I am not helping you anymore. And she took one of the relics, the Eye of Amon-Thul, and used it to essentially stop the demons in the temple. She shut them down. We don't know exactly what she did, but she stopped them cold. And as a result, when the main portal got destabilized by Malfurion, and when the sundering happened, they protected Suramar, but they didn't protect the temple. The bubble they created didn't include the temple. The temple and all, that's where it's the Broken Shore today, is where the Temple of Alun / Tomb of Sargeras is. It's because they didn't include it in the bubble because it was full of demons. And so it got sunk right to the bottom. Like when the sundering happened and everything collapsed, the temple got pulled down with it. But that wasn't the end for the temple. That was just a temporary
merely
reprieve.
A setback.
It was for, you know, it looked like good news for everybody else involved. It's like, you know, that place full of demons that we used a magical artifact to stop from destroying our world got sunk under the water. Nobody was crying over it. I don't know exactly how Eowyn knew about it. Like, that's something I don't really know.
I have
really
some
know.
Interesting ideas, but we'll get to those later.
should I just, you want to take over here? Because you just, you know, do you want me to keep going or Joe? Or
I was
Joe?
Just going to add in, like, this was always one of the more fascinating things to me, is not that necessarily that they tried to open a portal. They did open a portal in the temple at some point during this battle, and that portal had to be shut down. So it makes you wonder, because if a portal was opened up at the Well of Eternity and it needed that much arcane power essentially to fuel it to get the demons through, and they were able to open up a portal here, what kind of power is just nascent to this area? Like, what is this thing sitting on top of? And it could have something to do with, you know, any number of things, but it makes me curious as to what the real nature of that sort of that moon pool was.
We're
so
going to talk about this later. okay, so obviously Temple went to the bottom of the ocean. Suramar was okay. Temple was not. That's okay. There were a lot of demons in it. They presumably all drowned or got sucked back into wherever they came from when the Well of Eternity did its little implosion deal at the end of the War of the Ancients. 10,000 years, well, not 10,000 years, not quite 10,000 years later, several thousand years later is when the temple was revisited and when it earned its current name. And that was because of one person, that was Eowyn. Eowyn was the first, well, she wasn't the first guardian. She was one of the guardians of Azeroth. She was kind of charged with protecting the world from the Burning Legion and all of that. And one day she kind of noticed that something was going on up in Northrend. So she traveled up to Northrend to find out what was going on exactly. And it, well...
Well, and that was the interesting thing, because it was born of also like a little bit of pride, too, where she believed that she was the match for essentially what was a god. Striding Azeroth. So she battled the Demon Lord, and she quote unquote killed the physical shell. And it was interesting because what do we know about demons is that they don't necessarily die, but do we know if she knew that? But she had a fear that the essence of Sargeras was going to linger on. And so to keep that from happening, she wanted to lock the ruined husk of his body, within this ancient hall, this thing that had been raised from the bottom of the sea by you know, fell arcane energies. And then she not only did that, but she added her own sort of failsafes to what was already built in by the ancient night elves, by the ancient, you know, priestess of Alun, to contain the fell. Now, she was absolutely right that Sargeras' spirit would linger on, just she wasn't correct in how it would, considering during the entire point of that battle, or the end of that battle, he managed to project some of himself into her.
Yeah, and...
There's actually... can I mention something? Because this is always kind of bothering me.
Sure.
When you guys listen to the radio play, right?
Yes.
Did anyone else think the radio play was hinting that she found the temple because someone wanted her to?
Maybe.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there.
You want to go into that a little bit further? Because that's fascinating. Okay.
When you listen to the radio play talks about the fight Joe was just mentioning. And it talks about it briefly. What happens is that, you know, Gul'dan was sent to Azeroth. And I'm not going to get into the whole it was the second Gul'dan thing. You guys know this by now, and if you don't, it was the second Gul'dan. Second Gul'dan was sent to the tomb.
Gul'dan 2.0.
When he got there, he found these already, like the things Joe just mentioned, the arcane wards that were locked in place, and he began trying to undo them, you know, because they were in the way for what he was sent there to do. Then Khadgar, and I can't stop calling him Dadgar, and it's the Father's Day, so it's really hard. Khadgar shows up, and one thing Khadgar immediately noticed was that this wasn't any arcane wards. These arcane wards were sealed to the Guardian's power.
Right.
But some of them didn't seem like they were wards at all. And he was very confused as to what they were there for or what they were doing. And there's an implication there that some of the stuff was set up, obviously. It's like somebody was working to lock this place down even more. Like it was, there were original wards that that were there way before the Guardian showed up. There were like arcane wards to lock the place down from way further back. And then there were the new wards from the Guardian, but some of the things that had Guardian power on them weren't right. And he didn't understand what they were for, what they were doing. And then there's a fight between him and Gul'dan, and Gul'dan, you know, the portal we currently have blazing over the Broken Shore is the result of this fight. It's the result of Gul'dan winning this fight. But that took place inside the temple, inside the tomb of Sargeras. We don't know exactly where that took place yet. I mean, because
somewhere
it's
deep
not,
within.
Well, yeah. Which, I mean, I think we're going to see that during the raid. It's very likely we're going to actually get to the place where that was done. Certainly we're going to, there's going to be some stuff going on that we've never seen before in that place.
What I find interesting, though, on that sort of thought process that you have there is we don't know the time on those wards either, because one of the things that happened when Sargeras inserted himself into Aegwynn's soul, essentially, is that he started twisting her thoughts and started influencing her. So she could have come back multiple times, because there was a long stretch of time where she just sort of disappeared. You know, she wasn't, and we've seen this with Medivh as well later on, but like she could have gone back any number of times and have been putting more in place, but not necessarily understanding what she's doing.
Either yeah, that, but, or maybe she didn't realize, well, obviously she didn't realize what was going on as far as like that remnant of Sargeras that was inside of her. And it could be that as she was doing what she thought was a good job putting those wards in place, Sargeras was kind of subtly influencing her to add a little bit of bonus material in there for who knows what reason.
Now, there's another plus, thing that... Sorry, go ahead.
No, just plus there's also the fact that she chose this place, which already had a demon portal built into it once by the Legion.
Do you think that he sent her there?
That's what I'm thinking.
On purpose?
I'm really confused how where that influence would come from first, though.
No, but that's the thing. If she kills him, he enters her. Now he's inside her. She needs to find a place to hide the body. There are so many places in Azeroth she could have stuck that thing.
Ulduar.
Yeah. So many where she could have just taken that thing and stuck it, and we might never have heard of it again. She takes it to the one place left on Azeroth that had a giant portal to summon demons. Do you see where I'm going with this?
But like, I mean, but that comes into the whole speculation of how quickly would his influence be exerted too? Like, was it immediate? Was it something where,
well,
you know, it was the last gasp?
Considering that he was planning this from the get go, like this was his game plan. He wanted her to kill him. Essentially, he wanted to inhabit her. He wanted to possess the powers of a guardian himself.
But the reason I question that is like, if we go back to Chronicle, where we talk about the death of the Titans and how they slammed into their Watchers, how quickly was that essence or that knowledge brought up to them, right? Like, how like, we know that there's...
That wasn't the same, though. That was the full force of a Titan entering a being.
Sure.
That was a new issue. This isn't that. And if you think about it, it even says, when you're reading Chronicle, he talks about how he couldn't seduce her. And he couldn't, like, you know, he knew he didn't have time to seduce her to his side or to beat her into submission, which is why he wanted to move into Medivh, which means he had to make an attempt. Do you know what I'm saying?
Which could have been conversation or whatever during the battle as well, or it could have been something beforehand, sure.
Just otherwise, there's no reason. There's an entire world full of places to stick a giant monster body. The idea that she just randomly picked the one place on Azeroth that had a fully functioning demon portal ritual sealed into it. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, I just feel
it's
like
a little too convenient.
There's another there's also another thing too that a lot of people I don't want to say forget, but Gul'dan 1.0, when he originally got to the Tomb of Sargeras, and I understand that stuff has been retconned a little bit, but what that was one of the coolest things of Warcraft 3, the Frozen Throne, way back in the day, that I loved. I loved the scene of going to, you know, the Tomb of Sargeras, going to that area, going to see that, is he chronicled things in not fell runes, but blood runes, that Maeve says that he chronicled his journey. What if he didn't? What if he was instructed on how to warp or begin to warp what was already there without realizing that's what it was? Because don't forget, he was manipulated the entire way. What if Kil'jaeden said, hey, you know, you could go ahead and do this, and that'll help you get through these ruins, and this will help you, you know, gather that power. But really, it's warping those wards that are in place, maybe to loosen up the locks on the portal instead of him being able to just claim the power of Sargeras' dead body.
Like, Kil'jaeden so is the deceiver.
He is the deceiver, and at that point, like I said, he had to know that Gul'dan, what he was planning to do, and these runes are literally everywhere. Like, and it's played out through a flashback and everything else, but it's one of those things that never gets talked about again. So I'm wondering, are those runes still there? Did they do their job? Did they transform? Did they seep in to what was supposed to be there? Because, like, Gul'dan 2.0 understands that he's been there, but you would imagine that if he's going through the same path that Gul'dan 1.0 went, he would have noticed his handwriting on the walls. He didn't. It was never mentioned. So I'm curious.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still suspicious of why she picked that building.
Oh, I am absolutely suspicious of it too, but I mean,
it's kind of a convenient choice.
Keep in mind, she had to pick it up out of the bottom of the sea. It was on the ocean floor. She had to use her power to raise it.
Like, I don't think it actually says that she raised it. I believe she just stuffed it down there, because there's nothing that says that. And I mean,
pretty sure the Chronicle says it.
I don't think
it says straight up she used her power to pick it up out of the water, and then she put it back down when she was done.
I don't remember reading that.
I do, but I might be wrong. I'm going to go look it up.
Well, you can look it up, and while you're looking it up, I'll go on and talk a little bit more about this, because obviously the Avatar...
Lots more to do.
Huh?
I said, yeah, obviously, lots more to do. You should go. Go.
Okay. Well, we got the Avatar of Sargeras locked away in this tomb. And somewhere along the line, Medivh makes contact with the orcs on Draenor, pulls them into Azeroth. Gul'dan was the one that basically got a deal. He got cut a deal. He was told that, you know, if he brought the orcs in, they conquered Stormwind, conquered humanity, all that other stuff, Gul'dan would get an item of immeasurable power, and he was really excited about that prospect, because that's all Gul'dan really wants in life, is just more power. I should say in death, because he's dead now, twice. Gul'dan wanted that thing, and he was willing to play the game that Sargeras had kind of given him, where he's, you know, kind of puppeteering the whole horde and leading them against humanity. However, there was a moment where Khadgar and Lothar discovered that Medivh wasn't quite what he was supposed to be, that he was something else. Because obviously when Aegwynn had her kid, she passed that essence of Sargeras into the kid, and that was Medivh. That was how Medivh came to be. When Medivh came into his power, he was knocked into a coma and woke up and wasn't quite in control of himself, because that coma gave Sargeras plenty of time to just sort of seep in and start influencing him. So Medivh wasn't really... he wasn't working with Sargeras. It was just Sargeras was kind of...
he was a vessel.
He was kind of... yeah, it was like... I don't know. I want to say a mech, and that's not right at all. But I do. It's like the Medivh mech. Sargeras is just steering it around, casting spells, getting things done. And then every once in a while, Medivh would kind of snap out of it and go, hey, what am I doing? Oh, yeah, I'm doing this other thing over here. But it was this really back and forth. He was almost kind of mad. He appeared mad a little bit. Those that knew him, and when Lothar, Khadgar, even Garona to a degree, they knew the real him. What they didn't know was that he had this kind of dark secret that was going on. And once that secret was discovered, they realized, oh gosh, we gotta take care of him. They confronted Medivh and Karazhan. They killed Medivh. And when they killed him, they also ended that whole spirit of the Avatar of spirit of Sargeras that was in Medivh. It was just gone. However, on top of all of this, while this fight was going on, Gul'dan's out here at a distance, and he senses that something is going wrong. And he senses that perhaps he might not get that really powerful goody that he was promised after all. So what he did was he kind of reached out to try and pry that secret from Medivh's mind before anything bad would happen. And Gul'dan was kind of poking around in there when Medivh literally lost his head and when Lothar cut it off. The backlash from that threw Gul'dan into a coma. And when he woke up, the Shadow Council was no more. And he was in disgrace. And Orgrim Doomhammer was knocking at his door and asking him, you know, saying, tell me why I shouldn't kill you right now. Which is when Gul'dan just sort of, you know, did the casual shrug. Hey, Death Knights, how about that?
Would you like an army of undead warriors? I can do that.
Orgrim's just like, I'm listening. Okay, go on. But while all of this is going on during the Second War, he's playing nice with Orgrim Doomhammer, and he's playing nice and biding his time because he wants to get back to that thing that he was promised. They get close enough to it. They get to Lordaeron. They fight their way successfully all through the Eastern Kingdoms up to Lordaeron. And when they cross the border into Lordaeron, Gul'dan says, ah, there's the shore. And if I cross that shore, I'm going to hit the Broken Isle. I'm going to hit where the Tomb of Sargeras, where that thing is hidden. So, see ya. And he left. He took all of his followers with him and he deserted the Horde. And he left them there. And that's why the Horde lost the Second War. Because all of these spellcasters, all of these really powerful allies that Gul'dan had brought with him were suddenly no longer there. So it was
the Storm Reavers and the Twilight Hammers?
The Storm Reavers, the Twilight Hammer. Basically, all of their big power players just up and left. And Orgrim was left with nothing and had to beat a hasty retreat all the way back to Blackrock, where he was eventually defeated. Anyway...
Although, to be fair, part of the reason that happened was because he sent his dragons to go kill Gul'dan's followers.
Yes, because he was and real mad.
He's like, if I have to lose, fine, but you know what? Go kill those people.
And then he said, go get rid of those guys, traitors.
And he sent Rendon Meme, too, to go do it, which, yeah. I mean, they were no slouches in a fight.
No, they
so not
were
only
not.
You're sending your dragons, but you're sending the Blackhand twins, basically, to go handle this thing.
Winter twin powers, Myrtleate. Anyway... Gul'dan.
I found one thing here. I was looking when I was looking stuff up.
Yes.
It doesn't actually say whether or not Egwene lifted the temple or went down there herself, but this is interesting. One of the things she did was ward the tomb so that no Azerothian could enter it.
Yeah, yep. And I was going to bring that up, which is why that was the whole thing with why Gul'dan was so important to Medivh, essentially.
Because he was an orc from Draenor, which meant that he could get in that place.
He was exempt from the runes, yep.
Yeah. And Gul'dan traveled to where the tomb of to where the temple of Ilun used to be, now the tomb of Sargeras, raised it out of the water, and trucked on inside to go get his goody. And he found a load of angry demons waiting for him that promptly ate his face and left behind the skull of Gul'dan, which is an entirely different story. But at that point, tomb of Sargeras up out of the water, it's just out there. And nobody's doing anything with it. Nobody's doing anything at all with it until years later, Illidan shows up. And, well, it wasn't years later. It was a couple of years.
It was the Third War.
It was going from the Second War to the Third War. About a decade.
About 10 years?
Yeah, about 10 years.
The Illidan thing is why I think that the runes were altered by Gul'dan 1.0.
Okay.
Because Illidan's a race of Azeroth, yet he was able to walk inside of the tomb.
Well, for that matter, the wardens go in the tomb, too.
They do as well.
Was that before or after Illidan consumed the Skull of Gul'dan?
It doesn't matter. He's still an Azerothian.
Sure. After he consumed the Skull of Gul'dan, he was all demon-y.
I would argue Maiev wasn't demon-y.
Maiev was not. Yeah, you're correct.
And she was absolutely inside with several Watchers.
Okay. Yeah, but it could very well be not necessarily that he altered them so much as he just flat out broke them. Because
also possible.
You know, the wards still kept an Azerothian out, might have still, you know, he wasn't subtle.
No.
Gul'dan wasn't the kind of guy that we saw something magical, he'd be like, I should study this carefully.
I should treat this with care. No, he wants to bust it open and see what makes it tick.
Yeah. Well, you know, which is also interesting because that is a departure from the original portrayal of him, which I always found interesting as well, because he was always worried about drawing attention to himself, not necessarily subtly handling magic, but he didn't want his machinations known. And
yeah,
so,
but
like,
when he's at the temple, that's no longer the case. I mean, he just picked up the Stormreavers and the Twilight Hammer and took off. He's past the point of not drawing attention to himself.
In that regard, yes, but he made it a point when he was on the island to tell them to be careful and not, you know, be careful of whatever we're waking up, or try not to, like, wake anything up, which, you know, backfired. But still.
I don't know. I feel like we're definitely in an Alia Yachta-esque period here. Once you've committed to getting in the tomb, he even says, make haste. Like, we are in a hurry now. This is, we have to get in, get the power, or we're going to be destroyed. He knew what was going to happen. He knew what
Orgrim
would
do to him. There is a countdown timer. It has started, and we've only got so long before.
I mean, it's actually interesting, too, because I don't want to talk too much about things that don't have anything to do with the temple, but the after effect, they went after that skull immediately. Like, the Horde of Draenor went after Goldon's skull instantly. They knew it was powerful. And they broke into the temple, so it might have been them that screwed up the wards, because they went in. It was good old Terran Gorfiend himself. I don't think he's actually the one that went, but he sent
Ragnarok Bloodreaver.
Wasn't Fenris Wolfbrother there too?
And Tagar Spinebreaker.
Tagar Spinebreaker, yeah. So
they weren't going for the skull. They were going for the scepter, weren't they?
And the skull. No, they wanted both.
I thought it was the Eye of Sargeras and the scepter that they wanted.
No, the eye was already gone. No, they left the eye. They just plain left the eye because they went there before Illidan. They were well before
they
Illidan.
Went
oh,
there
no, I remember.
Because
Ner'zhul
needed things to open portals on his world. And where better to get things to open portals than this tomb where, hello, demonic portal to wherever had already been opened. So,
And I remember Ragnarok wanted the eye because that's what he was originally sent for. But Fenris decided that, no, I'm not doing this. We're not going in there. And so they never wound up actually doing it. Okay. Yeah.
No, they wanted the skull. I mean, you know, I don't know if Ner'zhul just wanted it to look at it funny or to berate it or what, but he wanted it. And he also wanted, they ended up getting the jeweled scepter of Sargeras, which they were sent to get. It wasn't just a. There wasn't an oops, no, because if you look at that, that's the Jeweled Scepter of Sargeras is one of the warlock things, isn't it? The Scepter of Sargeras?
I believe so.
And its power is the ability to rip portals into the world.
Yeah.
Like, so that's one of the reasons they wanted it, because if you want to make a whole bunch of portals, get the thing that makes portals.
He needed the Book of Medivh, because Medivh was also apparently pretty adept at opening portals. After all, he'd made the Dark Portal. The Skull of Gul'dan may have been tied to that, too, because Gul'dan was the one who opened the portal on Draenor's side. So everything that Ner'zhul was sending these guys for was pretty much directly related to opening portals. That's what he was after. That was endgame on Draenor. That was what ended up tearing Draenor apart. But moving on, let's move forward a little bit more, the whole 10-year period or whatever. Rossi, do you want to talk about Illidan when he came back and why he came back?
To make a long story short, Illidan basically was 10,000 years ago. Illidan had run into Sargeras when he was coming, trying to invade during the original War of the Ancients. Sargeras is the one that turned Illidan into more or less a demon hunter. Demon hunters are more like kind of a copy of what Sargeras did to Illidan. But Sargeras burned out Illidan's eyes, replaced them with Fellfire, inscribed his skin with magic.
Illidan see everything.
Yeah. And in the process is where Illidan first realized, oh, we're boned. We are utterly boned. We cannot win. Like, if we defeated every single demon coming through right now, they have way more of them.
It doesn't matter. There's an endless supply.
And these demons can come back too. So we're even more boned. I need to move this battle laterally. And that's one of the reasons he tried to preserve arcane magic, which is one of the reasons he got banished for 10,000 years in a prison underneath the Barrow Dens. When he got out, he was kind of crazy. But at the same time, he still had his plan. His plan was still foremost in his mind. When he went to Fellwood, he and Arthas ran into each other, and Arthas was like, you like demon power? There's a big skull over there. And if you were to eat it, you might be powerful enough to kill Tichondrius. Illidan was like, I don't trust you at all, but I do like power. So I'm going to go get that power. And he did. He went, and we don't know how the Skull of Gul'dan was last seen in Nurzul's hand on top of what was basically the Black Temple when he was using it to open portals. And he ran through one of those portals still holding the thing. So from the point in time where Nurzul had the skull in his hand to when it showed up in Fellwood, we don't know why it how it got
there. I have a theory about that one, actually.
I'm going to assume that when Kil'jaeden put Ner'zhul through the figurative blender, he took it from him, handed it off to Tychondris or one of the other Dreadlords and said, here, use this.
Hold on a second, because, I think that's what I was going to go with it, because I think that's kind of important.
Yeah.
Because Illidan was being sent to go retrieve the eye to go destroy the frozen throne. Yeah, and I'm sure this was part of a failsafe that Kil'jaeden had in place.
Yeah, the eye thing. Let's get this part done first, though, because the skull got huge. Like, it was very big when Illidan found it. It wasn't normal skull size anymore, and it was being used to basically just corrupt the heck out of Fellwood. If you ever wonder why Fellwood looks like that, it's because the skull of Gul'dan was doing it. It had gone from a normal orc-sized skull to the size of, it was as big as a demon, and it was just corrupting everything around it. Illidan fought his way to it. He drained it of all of its power, and when he did, he turned into the lovable bat-winged Illidan we all know and love today. The one that makes Naru swoon and is otherwise just ridiculously powerful. He went and toe-to-toe with Tychondris and beat him, which, you know, not many people can just go hand-to-hand with a Dreadlord and just walk out of
it.
Yeah, so he and Arthas then had another little showdown, but Arthas was like, hey, I got no... If you want to give the Legion grief, that is A-okay with us. And Illidan is like, us? And Arthas is like, I meant me. I certainly didn't mean an undead orc up north giving me orders, because that would be crazy. You just keep doing what you're doing. So Illidan, after this, you know, basically ended up heading out to Outland to escape the Legion because... Well, he'd annoyed them. And essentially, he gets given an order. Like, Kil'jaeden comes to find him and says, look, I don't like you. And I really don't like the way you screwed up our invasion of Azeroth. But I don't like the guy that told you to do that even more. So here's the deal. I will give you all the power you want.
One last chance. Yeah. You get one more chance, demon buddy.
Yeah. And here's the deal. You go and take care of him. For me, so I don't have to sully my hands with it. And I will, you know, we know all sorts of things. You're curious about demons and magic and so forth. I've got all the power in the world. I can show you all sorts of things. It's literally like the scene of Aladdin where it's like, I can show you the world, except it's Kil'jaeden and Illidan on the carpet. And if
I want that. I want that as a picture of Patreons. If you're listening, let's do this.
But if you read the Illidan book, in all sincerity, this is a really complicated back and forth game between these two. At this point, if you read the book, when Kil'jaeden is making this deal, Illidan knows that Kil'jaeden is lying right to his face, and Kil'jaeden knows that Illidan is lying back. And the game is, how many layers of lies can they maintain? And the best part is that Illidan never actually directly lies. Because
he tells him exactly what he needs to know and nothing more. Yeah.
You don't directly lie to Kil'jaeden. Kil'jaeden is going to see that coming. This is a guy who is an expert at being lied to.
He's the deceiver.
Yeah, you don't try and one-up him. So Illidan, it's a very back and forth. Illidan decides, if I'm going to try and save my planet, I have to do exactly what this maniac wants. So he goes, where is he going to go? Where is he going to find something powerful enough to destroy the Lich King? And this is where I think what Joe is talking about comes in, because he just happens to know about the Tomb of Sargeras.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, the Tomb of Sargeras, he wasn't involved in any of that back in the day. He certainly wasn't around for Eowyn putting Sargeras in it. But even when the demons were first using it, he was not, those were not events he was privy to. He was busy dealing with on the other end of the continent with the main war. He was not there for any of this, and yet he knows all about it. He goes right to it. He goes right in, and he goes much. He's being chased by the wardens, and he has Naga allies that he's using at this time. The Naga allies are fighting the wardens. The wardens, as we've seen from doing Legion, the wardens had a presence on the Broken Isles, so they kind of. It's not surprising they knew about the tomb, or at least its rough location. But what's surprising is, he gets right in there way before they can. They're not even close to beating him to it. He finds the eye, and he immediately immediately knows how to use it. Like, just boom. He gets there and he's like, yeah, I have the Eye of Sargeras and now I'm going to use it. And he teleports out of the tomb with it and he leaves the wardens to die. The only reason that any of them get out, Maiev gets out. And the only reason she gets out is she literally shadow steps just as it's collapsing. The place is falling down around them. So she leaves like many of her fellow wardens to die, like on their insistence. I think Nysha in particular, Nysha's like, you have to go. You can't stay with us. And she's like, I can't leave you. And he's like, you have to. You have to go. You have to catch him. That's one of the reasons that Maiev became crackers later. But Illidan got in, got the Eye of Sargeras, and left. The demons that ate Gul'dan were nowhere to be seen. Like, and we know this because as she's going through the temple, Maiev is finding those blood runes that Joe mentioned, and she's effectively reliving his journey down mm-hmm. into the tomb. And so when he gets eaten by demons, he apparently, after this was happening, he wrote a little rune to tell everyone, this is the part where demons ate me, because she finds it, like, you know, and sees his destruction. Illidan
it's a little
had no
known
problem.
Rune. It just reads, yeah. Well, wow.
What's interesting too about that, though, what's interesting about that too is like going back to just the Second War and going back to Terran Gorfin and Ragnar Bloodreaver, when he was sent to go get the jewel scepter of Sargeras, they didn't just walk in and take it. They did have to fight a demon that had it. We don't know what else they fought in between then and there. Like, that's never really been discussed. It's entirely possible that there might not have been any demons left, or they could have been sort of moving to the wayside upon the command of a higher power that says, yeah, let them take the eye. We got work to do. Like, it's interesting because it could go either way.
Okay, so that's big, long history of the Tomb of Sargeras, and obviously the last time we saw it was when Illidan took the eye and left, and we hadn't really been back since. It's just been out there in the water until Legion, and Legion, in the audio drama, Gul'dan revisits, and he opens that demonic portal, and now we're dealing with the aftermath of that. We're going to be going into the Tomb of Sargeras, and there's a bunch of bosses in the tomb. Have you guys seen the boss previews for these?
Yes.
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
I looked at it.
For people who are going into the Tomb of Sargeras for the first time and you don't want to be spoiled, maybe you want to turn the podcast off now and come back after you've visited all of the delights that the place has to offer. For people who don't care about spoilers, hey, keep listening. We're going to talk about everything that's in there. As far as the bosses go, the bosses that are located in the tomb, there's several of them. Some of them seem to be more important than others. Obviously, we're going to have to deal with the fallen Avatar. It's there. It's there, and we're going to have to fight it. But before that, there's a few other things, little things that are kind of locked away that are interesting to me. Particularly, did you guys see the Desolate Host?
Yes, that was interesting.
Okay, so the Desolate Host, the Dungeon Journal entry says that once this was a sacred burial site for the Night Elves, the Temple of Elune, we're assuming, and it says, but the Legion has twisted these grounds with the Engine of Souls. This foul machine draws upon the energy of the dead, twisting them into abominations. Due to this corruption, these tormented spirits have become monstrosities, looking to feed on any who descend into the tomb's depths.
It's not the first time we've seen that, really.
No, it's not the first time that we've seen that, and it looks very similar to what we saw up in Ice Crown, is the thing.
It also looks very similar to what we saw in the Black Temple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say in the Black Temple as well. As
the Reliquary of Souls.
Yeah.
Well, plus Velen even says, when you're doing the Broken Shore, one of the things Velen says is, this is the remains of a soul engine, and the poor tormented spirits that wander it are the half-consumed souls of those that were powering it. Because we know fel energy, fel magic, is created by the utter annihilation of light and void. When light and void first collided in the Twisting Nether, that's what made fel energy come to be. And you can generate fel energy by destroying souls slowly. Like, that's how fel energy inherently is. It's not just death. It doesn't just about killing you. It's worse, because that's necromancy. Necromancy is about death. This is about the utter annihilation of souls, and that's what their power source is. So I really am interested in this one, just to see how much it throws light into what Illidan did. Because I get the sense that Illidan and the Reliquary of Souls, you remember that part in the book where Illidan, going back to the Illidan novel, where Illidan is generating, he's like basically mm-hmm. goes to Ashendown and collects a whole bunch of Draenei souls?
Yep. Yes.
To help jumpstart his portal? I think that's what the Reliquary of Souls is supposed to be.
Like the remnants of that?
Yeah, and I think that this is basically the worst part. And you, I mentioned her before, but oh, I find this part really horrible. Who's in this?
Yeah, that was my next point to make. Part of this whole engine of souls is the remains. She's called Soul Queen Dehanna, but it's basically the remains of High Priestess Dehanna. What's left of her. And she was the one who was the High Priestess of Alun at the Temple of Alun. She's the one who named Tyrande her successor. She's head honcho. She was head honcho during the War of the Ancients. And she's been corrupted and twisted. She was buried here, and she's been corrupted and twisted, and we have to fight her spirit, which is kind of depressing in a way, a little bit, just a little.
It's pretty horrible. What I find really horrible about this, although fascinating too, is that it kind of implies something for what's going on in the tomb, because there's another boss called the Maiden of Vigilance.
Yeah, that's
yeah. I was
going to
bring her up too.
We're going to get farther into that. Obviously, there are Sisters of the Moon in there. The Sisters of the Moon, they were wardens for the temple long before the Avatar of Sargeras was buried beneath it. But even in death, they've maintained their vigil over the millennia. Something twisted their ability to distinguish friend from foe. Basically, they were guardians. They've been corrupted. They think we're bad guys, so we have to fight them and put them down. That one, there's not really... none of these names seem to be like particularly relevant necessarily. It's Huntress Kasparian, Captain Yathay Moonstrike, and Priestess Lunaspire. And I don't think any of them were mentioned in the Ancients novels.
No.
I think these are all new people. There are Naga down there. The Naga are not there as part of the Legion. One of them, Mistress Sazine, actually says in the encounter, she says, "These fools bring the Tide Stone to us just as our blessed queen foresaw it." So we've got a hint at Ashara here. Ashara obviously doesn't make an appearance in there. But the two that I really do want to talk about here are the fallen Avatar itself, because it's the fallen Avatar of Sargeras. It's been imprisoned in here, and we have to fight it. And then the thing that is guarding it, and you guys made reference to it, the Maiden of Vigilance. And the Maiden of Vigilance, her Dungeon Journal entry reads, "Charged by Aetwynn to defend the Tomb of Sargeras, the Maiden of Vigilance has stood watch for hundreds of years. Yet the Guardian did not foresee what effect the Avatar's seeping fell energy would have on this Titan construct. Slowly warped by this maleficence, the Maiden now seeks to destroy any inner path." Here's what
Guardian
I want to know.
Guardian didn't see, or the Guardian knew?
Huh?
So the Guardian didn't see, or the Guardian was deceived?
Maybe. Either or. But here's what I want to know, and I'm going to pose this question to the both of you. Where did Aegwynn find the Maiden of Vigilance?
Where did her son find the Maiden of Virtue?
Yep. Like, that's another question. I was going to bring that up, too, because it's the same... It's the third time, really, we've seen this type of maiden, right?
Yes.
We saw one at the Halls of Stone.
Yes.
Now we see, and keep in mind...
Well, fourth time, actually, right? Because Alduin.
Well, if Alduar, too, for that matter. I mean, you know, Araya in Alduar
So these seem to be a common construct.
These are keepers. They're not
keepers.
They're not watchers, but they're keepers. And that means something very interesting that we don't know yet. Like, we don't know why the Maiden of Vigilance, the Maiden of Virtue, why are they working for Guardians? When did that happen?
Okay, so this is where I pop in a picture of the interior of the tomb into Skype, and I will probably use this as the header image, but I want you guys to take a real good look at that and tell me what you see.
Oh.
It is the interior of the Temple of Alun / Tomb of Sargeras. There are four stained glass window panes. Each pane depicts...
Stained glass, yeah.
And what
Each one is one of the pillars, right?
No. It depicts night elves holding the pillars of creation. And what do those look like? Where have we seen stained glass like that before?
They look like the ones in Alduar. The ones with the weird mermaids and stuff on them.
The ones in the Titan facility.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, like I said,
it even looks like the face. You have kind of like what looks like almost the middle part there. Mm-hmm. With like the lines going through it, looks an awful lot like the part when you just get past the door that's a face and you're running in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looks like that chamber with if one of the windows was broken and you could go through it, that's what it looks like.
Why would a night elf temple have stained glass that looks like the same stained glass we saw in a Titan facility.
Because it is a Titan facility. Like I said, way at the beginning of our call, the beginning of the recording here, the beginning of the podcast, they were able to use a massive source of power to generate a demonic portal. What generates massive amounts of power? Titan engines sure as heck do.
Well, plus, we know that the Night Elves found the Well of Eternity and were changed by it.
They were the Dark Trolls at that point.
We know that the Night Elves were finding Titan relics because that's where the Eye of Amon-Thul and the others. That's what Elisande was doing. That was her job for Ashara. Go find me these Titan relics, and she did. She found the Eye of Amon-Thul.
Here's my question, and the one that I said we were going to get to the point to eventually. Did the Night Elves choose to build the Temple of Ilun in that place because it was next to the Well of Eternity, or did they choose to build it in that particular spot because that's where they found these artifacts? Because they found a place of immense power and said, Ilun must have made this.
Or what if Ilun told them to build it there?
Actually, we're kind of assuming they built it.
Yeah.
It's true. We know that they found the Well of Eternity. We know that the Well of Eternity was built, in fact, by the Titans.
And there were wards placed on it to stabilize it, yes.
Yeah, and we know how they build things. They don't just build things, like they build big installations to run them. We have the one that's in the south, the Engine of Nalak'sha. I mean, we've got the one in the north, the Forge of Wills. I mean, we know that's how they do it. It's entirely possible that they might have just customized it. To, you know, we'll add elven statues to it and make it look elven, but they might have just found it.
The
interesting
is,
point is, wait, hold on a second. But the Titan facilities predate elves.
If this facility existed prior to the birth of the Night Elves,
how are they there in Sandglass?
If this facility was in the same place as what I'm suggesting here. Is that the Temple of Ilun wasn't just built in that spot because it was a good spot. The Temple of Ilun was built there because the Night Elves, these brand new Night Elves, or maybe even the Dark Trolls, but probably the Night Elves, found this place and said, wow, this place is reeking of power. And what they found was one of these Titan facilities, maybe the one that was built to stabilize the Well of Eternity to begin with. And they associated it with Ilun because once they got to the well, something happened there. They went from Dark Trolls to Calderay, and they said it was Ilun, and it probably was Ilun. Okay. Whatever Ilun.
So what if they were What if they were restructured as the guardians of that place as a result of being that close to the Titan facility? Because
in other words,
it would explain why they're there in the stained glass before they ever actually existed, right?
Guys, you know what else it explains?
What?
Why are there Night Elves statues in Ulduar?
Yep.
Yeah.
And
isn't that weird?
Because aren't there also Night Elf statues or vignettes or whatever in the dungeons as well?
Uh-huh.
The five mans, yeah.
Yeah. So sorry, go ahead.
If the reason that there are Night Elf looking figures in the stained glass is because that's the representation of Ilun, and they were made to be in Ilun's image.
Yeah.
The dark, you know, in other words, much the same way that we see, bloody heck, when you go into Ulduar and you see those stained glass, they're of strange sea creatures, but they change.
Yep.
The other thing is the stained glass changes in Ulduar. You start getting really weird dark forms, and then they're broken.
You have to realize that those dark forms, though, that might be reflective of the fact that Ulduar was an old god prison. It was a prison complex.
My point is that it might be that the stained glass is reactive. Because if you look at this thing you've just given us the picture of.
So the stained glass itself is living, right?
Yeah,
is
well, what you're possibly. Saying? But look at the thing she's posted here. Look at the image dead smack in the middle of it. When you have the four stained glass images, and then it kind of looks like a cloaked figure shrouding the moon. It's like a stylized thing. But it's very much like wings sweeping up and kind of like a cloaked, cowled thing right dead center.
Well, here's my thing that I'm looking at here. You have the four panels underneath, obviously. There's the hammer, the stat, you know, you've got the tide stone, there's the shield. Above it there, that moon crescent and the symbol beneath it. Doesn't that look a lot like Ysera's crown?
Yeah, I was going to say that too. It looks like Ysera's crown. But I mean, it makes sense, though, that this would be a Titan facility, too, because what are we trying to do? What is our goal? We're taking three of the Pillars of Eternity in there because we already used one, or Pillars of Creation, excuse me. We already used one in the Temple of Eternal Cathedral. Light, right?
Yeah, Cathedral.
Cathedral of Eternal Light. We already used the Aegis. There's three left. There are three pillars there. Those are probably keys to activating a Titan engine. They're essences of the Titan to begin with.
You notice that there's three pillars left, and there's also three glowing pedestals.
And we know from Aegwynn's echo, her recording, her Leia moment from the Cathedral of Eternal Night, that we are doing this specifically to start something. What if this was a last-ditch defense engine against the Legion? What is this going to do? When we activate this, what is this going to do?
That's...
Well, one thing we know for one thing, that the temple had wards that stop fell energy, because that's why she used it.
But there's...
Aegwynn put the Avatar here because the Highborn wards were able to stop fell energy. That's how Elisande stopped it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Elisande came here. This is where Elisande used the Eye of Amon-Thul, which goes into one of those three niches, right? Because we're going to use it.
You would assume so.
So we're doing the same thing, but we're doing it with all of the pillars, because we've got one in play.
So what is that going to do exactly? I guess is the big question, and we won't know that until we actually beat the
team. This is reminding me so much, though, of the fact that when you go to Alduar, in order to activate the room that summons Algolon, that basically says, hey, Algolon, come here, you need to get keystones off of the four, you know, the Watchers who are there.
Yes, you do.
You need four of them, which is weird because there are more Watchers than that. But you need exactly four of them to get that thing to activate. Now we're finding ourselves in another situation where you need four of something to activate.
Only this time it isn't. It isn't.
It isn't calling Algolon. What does it do?
No. Yeah. You don't think it's calling Algolon. Shouldn't be calling Algolon. So what is it calling? And I have a feeling. I mean, obviously, we don't know how this raid is going to end. It hasn't opened yet. Nobody's beaten it yet. We don't know what the end cinematic is going to look like. We don't know what's going to happen after that final encounter. But I feel like whatever it is, it's going to be a doozy, you know?
And what if what if that's the reason why we have... What if that's why we have to leave? What if that's why we have to go to Argus after this? Like, what if... I have this thing of, like, in my brain, I just see us turning on, like, this giant expulsion ray, essentially, that takes all of the fell and sends it back off to its originating point.
Which means that Kil'jaeden, who is the final encounter in this dungeon, we don't actually kill him, we just send him right back to where he came from.
But we know where that is as a result of this, and combined with the work that Illidan did.
Maybe we follow him to finish the job?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I know a little bit about the Kil'jaeden fight from having written the article about the things we know about the opening RP.
I don't know if we want to, like, how much do you want to spoiler here, though?
That's why I'm not just saying what I know.
I'm thinking we'll hold off on spoilers for that, because I think we've gotten far enough into the spoilers just talking about the bosses and stuff. But it's really kind of some interesting conjecture going on here, because the Temple of Alun, I mean, you kind of wonder if there are Titan, if there's a Titan Watcher, if there's a Titan Keeper present, if there's this stained glass that looks remarkably similar to what we saw in Alduar. I mean, and it could just be an artistic choice. It could just be an artistic choice by the game designers where they're like, oh, let's make it look like that other stained glass because that was really pretty. Or it could be a direct reference that these areas are somehow kind of subtly connected. And that would make sense given that the Pillars of Creation are depicted here. And the Pillars of Creation are not, they aren't Kaldorei artifacts. They aren't.
No.
They are Titan. So what I'm wondering is if this is a Titan facility, what was this a facility for? And my logical conclusion leap is that it's tied to those original wards that were set up around the Well of Eternity, you know, way back when it was really tumultuous before they calmed it down and everything, right after it had first kind of burst open.
And I sort of like the idea that maybe these stained glasses aren't reactive. Like, I think that's cool, but I kind of like the idea that the stained glass depicts to what the Titans had in mind, and that whatever had settled around these facilities first would have been slowly rewritten into this form. Like, I kind of like that idea. I don't know why.
It's just an elegant idea, I guess. Rossi, do you have any more thoughts on that?
Why do the Jinyu look so much like Night Elves?
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's the same skeleton, but...
Jinyu look so much like Night Elves, and they were exposed to the essence of Amon Thul.
Mm-hmm.
The eye of Amon Thul was used in this tomb and is clearly originally from here.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we have the power of Amon Thul.
And if they were just fish that or murlocs that happened to be near there and get rewritten into that form, that makes sense. And
there's a Titan prison.
Yep.
In the south of Tanaris, where C'Thun used to exist, in that Titan prison are two emperors of all Silithid, all Karaji. Those two emperors look like Night Elves.
I like this idea that it was a long game from the Titans.
So I'm thinking that there's a couple of different things that this facility could be. And the other thing that this facility could be would have potentially disastrous implications later on down the road. Like, say, in the next expansion. The Titans imprisoned all of the old gods.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. There's one of them that we haven't actually encountered yet. And we know that certain chatty weapons have sure been talking him up. He's also responsible for the Emerald Nightmare, which has made a disturbing resurgence in Val'Shaerah, which we took care of, but it all seems to be concentrated around this one area. So what if this wasn't a stabilization facility? Ooh. What if we're looking at the last prison?
And it would make sense, too, because the last thing in the Emerald Nightmare raid is that conversation about the portal isn't closed.
Right.
And what is this facility that revolves around? Portals.
Well, and that's the thing is, if Aegwynn showed up and said, oh, there are already wards here in place. Cool. I can use this place. It's really good at keeping stuff locked away. Why? Because it's been locking away an old god all this time.
And what if it wasn't Sargeras that whispered in her ear?
Yeah.
What if it was an old god whispering, hey, you could totally do this.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of implications here. There's all kinds of implications as to what's going to happen in the tomb and also the aftermath of what's going to happen once we've defeated the tomb.
And it would explain why the Naga were so free to come and go.
That's why,
Ashara had made a deal with the old gods, yeah.
You realize that this means that Ashara had within her grasp two of these relics and blew one up and had the other one stolen from her. Because she's the reason the Tidestone got destroyed in the first place.
Mm-hmm. She was mad at Elisande.
Yeah.
Because Elisande had access to all of these things. And then Suramar got bubbled away. Presumably to, hide from the Legion. But I feel like part of it, a little bit too, was to escape Ashara's wrath. Because you don't want to make that woman angry. So yeah, there's a lot going on here potentially with the Tomb of Sargeras. Obviously that last bit there, it's all conjecture. We won't really know until we raid this place, but it does make for a really fascinating raid. And I feel like, I would have been happy with this as an endgame raid probably because there's just so much here to explore, but this isn't even the end. We have more after this. We're going to be going to Argus. We don't know much about 7.3 just yet. Maybe we'll see that pop up on the PTR at some point in the near future. Who knows? But we should probably wrap it up, I think. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys that are listening, Audible is offering a free trial through us. You can get a free 30-day trial with a free audiobook download. The book that we were discussing, Illidan, it's by William King. That one came out, was it earlier this year? Last year. It came out last year.
It was just around the time that Legion launched.
It came out when Chronicle 1 came out, a little bit after that. So Illidan by William King, it kind of goes a little bit more into the history of this place, and it's well worth the read. You can pick that up as your free audiobook download if you sign up for a trial. To do that, go to blizzardwatch.com/audible. You can sign up. It's all good, and you'll be helping support the show. Final thoughts, you guys. What do you expect to see at the end of this? What do you think, like, long shot, we're going to see at the end of this, Joe?
I mean, there are so many different things, but I think we might actually be finally getting more info on, like, what you were saying, like, what okay. actually created
What would you
Elves.
Love to see out of this? What's the one thing you would love to see come out of all of this, the Tomb of Sargeras raid?
The one thing?
Yeah, that you'd love to see the most come out of all of this.
Final definitive in-game answer to what Alun is in the grand scheme of things.
Somehow I don't think we're going to get that. But
I don't think so either, but you said what I want. That's what I would want.
It's a good thing to want. Rossi, same question.
Velen ripping out Kil'jaeden's heart in the middle of the Twisting Nether so he doesn't get to come back.
Ooh, so good.
I want the final countdown. I want the showdown, the reckoning. I want it done. I don't think Archimonde is dead, because when you do the raid, when you see the final cinematic, he's back on Draenor before he sends a Gul'dan to go do his thing. So I think Archimonde can come back. I want one of these guys to die and not come back. I want at least one of them to finally be dead.
You want one to die before we go and kill him?
I want them to die for real. I don't think Kil'jaeden will die. I don't think that'll be the end for him, but I want him to. It's time. We have been dealing with these people long enough. It's time we actually hurt the Legion, because we haven't yet.
It's true.
So it's time. I want to see that.
We've been throwing pebbles at it, and we've been just kind of staving it off, but we haven't actually defeated anything as much as we'd like to think that we've done so. And yeah, I don't know. I think the one thing I want to see that conversation between Kil'jaeden and Velen, because I don't know what's going to come of it, but I bet you it's going to be a really good conversation to witness, and we'll want to grab our popcorn. Anyway, that wraps us up. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.